When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We get knocked down, but we get up again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus, and I'm here with Jim.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
But Pete's still not here.
Back in Kiev.
No, he's in the Isle of Wight still, but he'll be back next week soon enough, so don't you worry, ladies and gentlemen. We're still in a different studio, in case you're wondering why the sound is slightly different. Before we talk about lots of World Cup things, chaps, let's start off with your highlight of the tournament so far. Jim?
Well, I'm going to go for a very, very specific thing, which was Joel Campbell's pregnant with the ball celebration.
Yeah.
Purely because it's those little moments that you remember. That's the thing I'll see back in like 5 years and go, oh, yeah! Mm. And I'll remember exactly where I was, and it will bring it all back, and it will be amazing fun. Because this World Cup has been brilliant so far.
Oh.
So I think I'm going to remember it very fondly if it carries on like this. So, yeah, because it's all about those stupid little moments. And players know that as well. Campbell knows exactly what he's doing there. He's getting himself on that highlight reel at the end.
Does he have a significant other who's pregnant, maybe?
Maybe.
Possibly,
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen players like Totti do that, and obviously the famous
Roberto and Romario one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be,
Good start, Luke.
I thought you were going to be harsh on Campbell then, say in 5 years' time when he's playing in like the Kazakh second league, and we'll go, oh yeah, Joel Campbell. And I was thinking, hang on, he's an Arsenal player. He's played quite well against Uruguay.
He's incredible. Man of the match, undoubtedly. But I'm sure we'll come on to that.
I've got two words for you.
Yes.
Gary Lewin.
That's your highlight?
That is amazing.
It is amazing, but a man broke his ankle or whatever it was. Yeah, no, he's really badly hurt himself.
I know that he got carried off on the stretcher and his face was really funny, and that's all I care about. Shut up.
He's gone home.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he had broken his ankle. But it was. Is that,
the physio's been replaced.
Yeah, have you ever heard of a physio getting injured in a tournament having to go home because he got involved in the goal celebration?
No, it's quite something. And it's amazing that there's a reserve physio.
Well,
I mean, has someone else been called up now?
All bases covered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, apparently he trod on a bottle, or like a Lucozade bottle, and during the celebration,
unlucky.
And he went over on his ankle.
So unlucky.
That's gutting for him, because he's done so much prep.
Like, you guys, breaking your ankle on holiday is the sort of thing you can imagine happening to Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
But someone else, it just doesn't sit right.
So you guys aren't rejecting, you're rejecting my holiday.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know, in fairness, I've got no beef with the Lewin family. I didn't know.
They've
it was
got
a
beef with you now.
They have now. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know it was a broken ankle. Should I redo it?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Just Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We recorded the last show about 10 minutes before the start of the kickoff of the Netherlands show.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah.
And some of you were angry about
much
that.
Much to the dismay of a few listeners. Yeah.
So we're not going to mention it at all. We're not going to cover it.
Yeah. Then
I just covered it then. My highlight: Netherlands.
I have to say, Daniel Sturridge scoring, seeing the dance.
Yeah.
It's such a flipping marvellous moment, getting the first goal of the tournament. Mm. That leads us neatly onto England, I suppose.
It does.
It's an odd feeling, because England lost, but actually, it was an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, and it was encouraging as well. I mean, the main problem is in the last probably 20 minutes, shades of the old England came back. But basically, if Italy decide that they're going to sit on their lead, there's very little many teams can actually do about that. They could just mop up what we were doing all day. I think the corners were particularly like ineffective and just needlessly deep. They tried the same thing over and over again. It didn't work. We saw players trying to run into bundles of players, just trying to do it all themselves.
Syria caught a lot of the corners.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the Rooney corners was the worst corner I've
ever
seen.
Yeah, it went into the crowd. Woeful. Absolutely awful.
Talk of the pitch being involved with that, like he planted his foot and the pitch gave away a little bit. Which
well, you'd think, because...
I mean, whilst it's easy to sort of deride Rooney for that and go, oh yeah, 300 grand a week and he does that, I mean, obviously something's happened there.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't strike a ball like that normally.
No.
And it reminded me of the Beckham penalty where the pitch gave way
against Turkey.
Alpay went up to him first.
That's it. But I mean, okay, England have lost. We're still alive. It was difficult conditions. Yes, they were the same for both teams, but still difficult conditions. And actually, I thought in a strange way, I thought both managers got their tactics right. Obviously, Prandelli, they attacked down the left and got a bit of joy down there.
Yeah.
But I thought Hodgson, the way he set England out, he's a pragmatist. You know, he's realistic as well. If people are saying, well, Italy had a lot of possession, England are not a possession side.
No.
They're not a possession side. They don't have many players, if any, that are possession-based players. I mean, Wiltshire.
It wasn't an outrageous discrepancy in the possession,
no,
anyway.
There are a lot of ways to win a football match.
Yeah.
But if you want England to become a possession side, then you've got to change coaching at grassroots level. You've got to do all that kind of stuff.
That can't happen overnight.
Exactly. That's not a manager and a personnel.
That's another generation. We'll have to do that.
Completely.
We just can't do that.
Phil McNulty on the BBC website said that it was a defeat, but it was a defeat that felt different.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
It reminds me of when England got knocked out in 2010 to Germany. I remember citing what Michael Cox said about Germany. He said Germany didn't only beat England, they provided a template of what England must seek to become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that it, for the first time last night, probably because it's been the first time they've played a really high stakes game against a team that are good, where they were realistically expected to get something, England.
And probably better than.
Because the Euro 2012 build up was such disarray, and Hodgson couldn't really do anything then. England actually went toe-to-toe with the team.
Yeah.
Mm. They didn't say, right, they're a good team, we're going to be really reactionary here, we're going to sit back, we're going to try and hit them on the break, excuse me, and see what we can get out of the game, if we can nick it. They actually went for it.
Yeah.
But actually, bar a couple of... the second goal particularly was a bit disappointing, but bar that, I mean, England were okay. I thought they did well. And I thought Italy are a good team. I mean, they're not a spectacular team. I don't think Italy win the World Cup, but...
I think they're the best team in the group, though.
Probably are. And
they are.
They've probably got, along with, as I said in the last show, Croatia are pretty impressive in central midfield, but Italy in central midfield are brilliant.
And no one will want to play Italy.
No, absolutely not. And it's really strange to just think that this was, a much worse result than in Euro 2012, but a better performance. And it's heartening. I don't think I've ever been heartened by an England defeat before. I mean, the main worry again is that those old problems creep back in. The second goal, no one even put a challenge in the whole build up to it, and it was really, really sloppy. So
it made me yearn for Ashley Cole, basically.
I know
hindsight's like a wonderful thing, but I don't think Baines had the best game. I could see Ashley Cole stopping that cross.
And
to be fair, I mean, he's probably tired. And it was towards the end of the game, and it's difficult conditions.
Well, no, England did seem to flag a lot.
No, but I was just going to go on to say, not Baines, because Baines was just poor positioning, but Gary Cahill, Balotelli pulled off the back of him, and he was getting a bit of a run around anyway. It's only 50 minutes in, mate, but it's a difficult situation in terms of the temperature and the humidity, which you're not used to. You're still going to be tired.
Mm.
And then when you're tired, you're not necessarily physically tired because they're obviously top athletes, but mentally it becomes difficult. Mm. And I think he just let his concentration go for a little bit, let Balotelli pull off the back of him, and it was a bit easy for him. But other than that, I mean, the only thing you would say that England could have done slightly differently was the second goal was probably a little bit sloppy, and the composure in the final third wasn't particularly great.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, Rooney had a chance where he should have scored, where he even sent the keeper the wrong way and tried to go near post and just pulled it wide.
Mm.
I didn't think that was the howler that people were going
on. No, he had a lot to do, even when he'd made a very good position for himself. Yeah, it would have been... I mean, had that gone in, that would have been an amazing goal. Yeah. It's not like he's missed a tap-in.
Yeah, I think...
If you'd not seen the game and you'd read the reaction, you would think he'd missed an open goal or something.
Yes, I think the trouble for that is Rooney did the hard work, sent the keeper the wrong way, got it past the defender... And having done all that, then the result is not going in. You think, what a shame that was.
It was one of those funny games where legitimately you could argue that it was fair that it was 2-1 Italy. You could argue that it was fair to be 2-2, and you could probably argue England could nick it. I know that Italy hit the. I think they hit the post and the bar, didn't they?
The Pirlo free kick was unbelievable.
The heart wasn't really tested that much.
No.
Okay, he picked the ball out of the net twice. Fair enough. But Sirigu had a much busier evening. Now there were saves that you would expect. Certainly a good keeper to make, but still he's got to make those saves.
Absolutely.
England had loads more chances and loads more corners as well. I think they had 9 corners to Italy's 2.
Well,
in the second half, England pretty dominant. I mean, the final third composure wasn't great.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? The corners in particular were largely ineffective. Well, completely ineffective.
Yeah.
You know, we really, really need to do better on them.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, what we need is Gerrard and Lampard, and just play for set pieces. Yeah,
you're sticking by that.
What, Blood and Thunder.
I never said that.
You said Gerrard and Lampard last time out.
No, I said if there was a World Cup where they would probably be more suited, it would be this one, ironically, because of the way their games have changed. They both play deeper now.
Stop this.
No, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm saying...
Yeah, I love it. You've put words back in his mouth just to tell him to shut up.
Yeah. Right, if I may go on to the point I was about to say. Gary Lineker tweeted a couple of interesting things earlier, saying that England have had more shots on target than any other team in the tournament thus far. Yes, the conversion rate is obviously quite low, but that's encouraging. And England, only Italy have a slightly better pass accuracy rate.
That's amazing, because that's been England's big problem donkey's years.
Well, there was some silly sausage tweeted back, well, it doesn't matter how many shots on goal or passes you make, it's goals that count.
Yeah. Just piss off and watch soccer AM.
Yeah. Like they're not even partly interrelated. They're all completely related. That's a silly thing to say.
We don't want passes, we want goals.
Yeah. Mm. I was going to say that now, obviously, the Uruguay game becomes really important and it essentially could be a winner. I mean, you would imagine it becomes a winner-takes-all game. Mm.
If Uruguay play as they did against Costa Rica, then England should beat them.
England should win the next two games on the basis of what happened on Saturday.
But I was going to say that even if England do go out, you've got to hope that the media, the FA and fans and everything just stick and follow them, because it does genuinely feel like he's building something now.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that the performance was good, obviously, as an Englishman. But you know, we've said on the podcast before, Hodgson has dragged England away from the 4-4-2. He's tried to make them play. And people go on about he's boring and he just has two banks of four and this, that and the other.
But he's got to work with what he has.
But what a change. Like Prandelli said, I was, you know, worried about the England attack. Prandelli was really pleased, as he should be. He said, I'm pleased I've got my tactics spot on. He said, England have got one of the best attacking forces in the tournament. Perhaps a bit generous. Well, it is a bit generous. Mm. But he said this was a totally different team, and he was, said some nice things about England. Now, again, you can flip it all back round and say, oh, well, same old. We've come up short against one of the...
It did feel different, though.
It did feel different. And there's been some silly... Only one or two, though, I would say, silly comments made. And you can go away thinking, oh, we've just not got there. But you're absolutely right. It's the first game. We're still alive.
Yeah, it does feel like it's only going to take a little bit of tinkering to sort of unlock a free-scoring England. Because they really do have the firepower. Yeah. It's not quite clicking together the way we need it to yet.
Even someone like Daniel Sturridge, who we now almost automatically think of as the first frontline striker for England, he's not that experienced.
No, absolutely.
He's not played for that long.
That was Sterling's first start for England.
Yeah.
I mean, he was
magnificent.
Didn't he start in the warm-up game we got sent off in?
No, he came on.
Oh, okay, was a sub, wasn't he? Okay, can we talk about the goal that never was?
Yeah.
Jesus, I've never seen such a sort of close optical illusion. It was just into me.
It looked like
it had bounced down in the net. It was absolutely incredible.
Well, the person controlling the graphics for, was it on the BBC?
Yeah, he came up goal.
He thought it was a goal. Yeah. She thought it was a goal.
I got as far as the sharp intake of breath before going mental with the celebration. Then I realised that it hadn't been a goal. I just felt really silly breathing out.
I was like with like four of my mates and we celebrated. I would say, it doesn't sound like a long time, but if you think about it, it is a full minute.
A minute?
Yeah. Because I was jumping around.
The game had gone back.
Not looking at the TV. And at one point, because I was in my mate's flat in his front room, you can see out into the road outside. At one point, a couple of people came out of the house opposite. I looked up at us confusedly.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I thought, something's not right here.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, it was Sterling's reaction as well, wasn't it? It's like, he didn't seem that bothered.
No.
But the worst thing is, and it's a sad indictment of the way modern football is now, is another guy who was there last night watching the football with me started to have a go at Sterling for not celebrating the goal.
Oh my goodness.
I can't believe he's doing it now. The World Cup.
Like that. Did he used to play for Italy?
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to go back to...
We're driving that as much as anyone, to
be fair, exactly. So. I want to go back to what was just mentioned earlier before we move on, because people are talking about two banks of four, Hodgson, this and that. Not only is that lazy, it's also untrue.
Yeah.
It's not actually what he does.
No.
He hasn't done that. He didn't do that at West Brom. I fell into the trap of thinking he was like that a few years ago. He's not done that at all in England's qualifying games. He's played 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1.
Correct.
And another thing he doesn't get credit for, another thing I was chatting to Michael Cox about earlier today, was that like one thing's forgotten is that how early Hodgson has given some young players their start.
Yeah.
He gave Raheem Sterling his first England call-up after he'd made two Premier League starts for Liverpool, and Lallana had only made three Premier League starts. And look how far they've both come now. Yeah. I mean, you could legitimately argue. I mean, Sterling obviously did start for England in a major tournament, and Lallana was unlucky not to be selected
in the previous tournament. Well, also, as mentioned, I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain.
And also Ross Barkley as well. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Sterling, Ross Barkley, all of these players, they feel like they deserve to be there and they've earned their place. They don't feel like a punt from the manager on an exciting young player. He's bedded them in the right way so that they have the respect they deserve. They're also a bit protected from this, oh, we don't know what they're going to do hype around them. And it's a good recipe.
And I would have said, I said to you before, it would have been the easiest thing in the world for Hodgson not to call up any of those players.
Because
like I say, it's easy not to call up young players. I know I make that point a lot, but it is so true. You see managers over and over again do that. Oh, he's not ready yet. It's easy to get away with that. The media won't give you any stick for that. Mm. And so he's been brave with his selections, and I think he deserves credit.
The big talking point is Wayne Rooney, of course.
I think Wayne Rooney did okay.
Well, he did okay.
It was a brilliant ball for Sturridge's goal. It gave Sturridge a tap in an otherwise very difficult position.
I'm not sure it's a tap.
A tricky
well,
tap.
Well, no, obviously, you know, he still had a lot to do, but, you know, the ball had done so much of the work for Sturridge.
The ball couldn't have been better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the ball through from Sterling. I don't want to get all sort of Little Englander about it now, but sometimes you see Pirlo, who is a good player, and no one has been more, you know, appreciative of him than we have, I would say. I mean, he's a good player, of course he
is. Fantastic, yeah.
But sometimes he does stuff that he's just supposed to do as a midfielder anyway, and people lose their shit over it.
Yeah, I mean, for the people talk about him starting the move for the second goal. He passed it out wide.
Yeah, good.
People used to go mental when Gareth Barry did that.
He's doing absolutely no more and no less than that goal than what expected of him as a midfield player. Yeah. But what I was going to say was, when Raheem Sterling made that ball through to Rooney for the goal, took out about three or four players in one pass. If Pirlo had done that, everyone would have been like, oh, he's done it again. He's a genius. Yeah. What can you do against a genius? You know, and of course, Pirlo was brilliant for the first goal.
That was a lovely dummy.
He sold Sturridge up the river. Yeah. Like, he completely bought
that. I mean, to be honest with you, he absolutely did. But before Italy's first goal, you're still asking Marchisio to shoot from, what, 25? Yeah,
and get
maybe slightly longer.
A forest of players' legs.
I mean, it was a great goal.
It's unfortunate for Hart, because he saw it late, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a very clever goal because the shot was disguised by the defender well.
But what was incredible was the way England hit them back straight away. And then when England went 2-1 down, it would have to be Balotelli, of course, to score.
Yeah. And then needlessly giving some aggro afterwards. I'm all for that.
I immediately just thought, well, we're back again, boys.
Well, they've got to, the thing. That's what Italy did differently in their second goal than in their first. In their first, they went a goal ahead. It's a bit earlier in the game. They probably didn't really feel like they had a proper foothold in them. I mean, they were playing well, and it was quite an even game.
Yeah, I mean, Italy kept possession well.
But the one thing they didn't do, which I thought Pirlo and Marchisio deliberately did after the second goal, they just showed no ambition.
Yeah.
That 5 minutes after that, rightly so.
Italy is closed now.
Take the sting right out of it and just not let England get bounced back, because obviously you are vulnerable when you've scored.
Well, Italy did well is in the fullbacks, Chiellini and... I forget who was on the right.
Candreva had a really good game.
Yeah, well, he wasn't right back, but they just dropped deep, and then Sterling couldn't get in behind.
Yeah,
and they did that very well, and they did sit much deeper.
It was the young fellow who played right back, wasn't it? Because he bombed on for, and he was out of position when Rooney could cross that ball in.
Yeah.
Damian, his name is.
Yeah, he had a really good game.
Italy did really well when they got the lead, and they thought, right, let's very tough conditions, as you're saying, and they did very well to do that. And England, you know, made a few substitutions, had a couple of efforts, but didn't, as you said, Jim, in the last 20 minutes, they didn't look too likely to break through.
I think they were more affected by the heat than Italy were as well. There was four or five players cramping up, which is it's crazy. I mean, obviously that's the conditions, because you would never see that otherwise.
Because there were no water breaks, because apparently it's got to hit a certain temperature for water breaks. And Prandelli was furious about
that. Should just be added. I mean, look, as long as both captains agree to it, because of course it can be used for gamesmanship purposes.
Yeah.
As long as both captains agree to it, it should be to stop for a walk back whenever they want. The referee should have the power to do that, because the safety of the players is important. But at one point, which is quite a nice moment, it's a high tension, winner takes all, essentially. Well, not winner takes all, but a very important game. When Sterling cramped up, two Italian players were helping him out.
Yeah.
They were the closest people to him.
I mean, there was only one booking, which was Sterling towards the end. You know, I thought the game was played in a really good manner.
That was nice. I didn't even really notice the referee.
Yeah. No, it was great, actually. We said in the first podcast, I hope that we're not talking about referees throughout the tournament, and already that's a thing of the past. It's been very well officiated.
Could England have had a penalty or two? I mean, Welbeck's...
I think Welbeck's ran into the Italian players as much as they ran into him.
Gerrard,
I think
Gerrard
was more of a shout, but again, I mean, you certainly see it given, but I don't
normally,
think it was.
Normally, without that Fred penalty...
we'd have only missed it anyway.
Normally, I would say you're never going to get a penalty for that, but then Fred, unless you're the host nation, then you will.
Yeah,
because Fred got one. But that's not those two shouts weren't even really penalties. No. I don't think, to be honest, if England were 2-0 up at that point, they probably wouldn't have appealed for those penalties.
Well, Gerrard didn't appeal for his, right, which says everything.
Yeah. I was going to go on just before I forget, because we might move on. A friend of mine told me quite a funny story about it. He was in a pub for the England game. Mm. And there's this guy there at the bar, and these three absolute dickheads came in, big England fans, but dickheads, and saw this guy. And I think they sort of half knew him or something. But this is second-hand information, so I'm a bit sketchy on the details. But basically, they saw him, and they started wedgieing him in the pub at the bar, right? But it gets better than this, yeah? Started wedgieing him at the bar. Then one of them saw that he was wearing St. George flag underpants and went, "No, it's out of order. Stop. It's out of order."
Leave it.
Oh, no, not today. Not tonight. And let him off.
What a good lad that one is. Oh, my God.
If anything
what
sums
a
up
set
some
of bellends.
Yeah. Yeah, before we move on, should he have taken off Welbeck? Should he have taken off Rooney? Or should you even take with somebody else?
I think it was much of a muchness in that situation, really. I don't think...
I suppose if you're going to ask somebody to provide a moment of magic, Rooney is more likely than Welbeck.
I mean, do you think we're going to see the same lineup against Uruguay? I think he might stick with the exact same team.
He might
personally.
Well do. Well, I was going to ask you, Luke, actually, and it was what you said last time when we were on a podcast, that you said he'll play Rooney, but he's been preparing the ground, as you said word for word, to drop Rooney if necessary.
I just think he wants to make correct an environment where he's able to do that.
Yes, yeah. Which is absolutely spot on. Rooney has been getting a lot of stick, perhaps slightly unfairly, I would possibly argue, but there's maybe a few little criticisms in there.
Valid, though.
Yeah, well, do you think he should then drop Rooney and say, look, you're getting a bit of a tough time here, I'm going to take
you off? Well, it's so funny, because if Hodgson's not careful, this whole Rooney saga will... I mean, say, for example, if the FA lose their call, if England go out in the group stage and fire Hodgson, you could look back at it and say, well, Rooney was the biggest conundrum of his tenure, because he's not really had... He's not been able to drop him, but he's not really performed. And in many ways, the performance from Rooney last night was a typical, like, difficult performance, as in, like, he showed glimpses, he's put on the goal, he did well in patches, but he wasn't really overly convincing for the whole game. But at the same time, he didn't have a stinker. It's not an easy decision for Hodgson now, because he can say, I've seen a little bit of him, so maybe I can start him again in Uruguay. So it's very difficult.
He is out of position, though. Is there an argument to move Rooney in behind Sturridge than have Sterling or Lallana or Oxlade-Chamberlain either side? Because that gives you a hell of a lot of pace, and that puts Rooney in his favoured position. We've seen how well Sterling can play, and I think he could play in a different position. He was, yeah, but there's nothing to say wouldn't be so good out wide.
I take your point, but I just wonder, to put it back in your court, I wonder at what point do we stop entertaining the idea of moving other players around to accommodate him?
Well, yeah, I think Sterling has played... You know, on the flanks of Liverpool, though, so I don't know if it's as straightforward as that.
No,
I think he'd be more comfortable wide than Rooney would.
Here's another little angle to it as well. Sterling, obviously, Sturridge went off with a little injury, didn't he?
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
So if he's out for the Uruguay game, why not play Rooney right up top?
Yep.
Well, he's good as a number nine.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is that when it got to the point where England clearly were trying hard to break Italy down, and they were only getting the positions. The ball in positions out wide. He then brought on Lallana, probably to try and craft a way in a bit. Could he have done worse than bringing on Lambert? Now, I know Lambert's not... We don't want to sort of play Big Man up top or anything.
No, I'd have brought on Lambert, but Lambert's not really like that.
But if you are only reduced to playing the ball out wide, which is, of course, a classic thing teams do, you be compact, push them out wide, there was actually some good crossing opportunities, and you could have done worse.
I'd have brought Lambert on. Mm. I would have done. I wouldn't have brought Lallana on. I think he's a good player, and I think he can do things, but... It's a difficult ask.
It was a big ask for Lallana. Yeah, it was, you know, it's such a tough game.
Yeah. Hard enough when
almost like a defence v attack training ground exercise where everyone's knackered.
Because they've got everything they want out of the game, Italy, really, and they're just desperate to keep hold of it. That's why the longer it went, England not scoring after Italy went 2-1 up, the harder it was going to get. But the point is, if you're a player coming off the bench in any game, At whatever level, it's very hard sometimes to pick up the pace of the game. It takes you a while, and you bring on Lallana. I can't remember how long it was when Lallana was brought on.
20 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't an awful lot of time for him.
No.
And given that it's really, unless he has a really special, Rigo Sacchi-esque introduction where like everything Sacchi used to do substitution wise was amazing. Yeah. Like generally, they take a few minutes at least to get into the game.
Of course.
And then, and then you're expecting big things from a really inexperienced international player against a really good team. Whereas Lambert, in the position he plays and the way he plays, you probably think that that's the best way of going about it. I thought, because as you've said, they're moving the ball out wide anyway. A lot of Italy's play comes through the middle, so they're moving the ball out wide anyway. And that and the flanks are where players get the most tired, probably. So get the ball out wide, pop it into Lambert. Lambert's probably, and it's not a completely like anti football thing.
No,
it's a perfectly legitimate tactic for the last 15 minutes. If you need a point or you need a goal. Get it into Lambert. He's big and strong. He could probably do some damage.
Yeah, but putting a cross into the box and someone getting on the end of it is a very good way of playing the game.
Yeah. It's an English goal.
Yeah. But I do think our crossing was poor, though. The crossing was too high and deep and just
these strange looping corners that were
too easy for the Italians to pick off.
Wipe away the corners now. But some of the crosses into the box, you know, were low, were driven, they caused problems. And there was that one where it just went over too high when, I forget who was it, Barzagli or one of the defenders, just touched it over him.
Yeah.
So, I think England can be well pleased with that. The only thing I would say is that for the Uruguay game, it will be interesting to see what he does in front of Baines, because people say Baines was a little bit exposed. Interestingly enough, it was Welbeck who was playing on the left when Italy scored. People very critical of Rooney, saying he didn't give him enough cover. Well, it was Welbeck who was in front of him there. But if I'm going to be very, very naughty, ladies and gentlemen, and look at further down the line, I think England will win the next two games. If England finish second in the group, which, you know, you would have thought Italy would now go on to win the group.
Yeah.
The second round match, which England will be trying to get into, will be in Rio. England are based in Rio,
right?
Rather than Recife, which is quite a while away.
Yeah, and it's up and north. Also has the shark attacks. So.
It has the shark attacks.
We don't want that.
So shark attacks much further away, and I think will be hotter.
Shark attacks are not conducive to success in any sport field.
No, in any
environment. Well, in any field, I suppose. Yeah. Unless you're filming Jaws shark, 6 or whatever.
Well, specifically shark attack research.
But
even then, if you're a victim of a shark attack, your research becomes irrelevant.
Statistic. You just another it,
exactly.
Depends how the shark attack is. You could research yourself. So actually, you don't have if to you go survive out and do it. You work from home.
Yeah, you'd probably rather it not happen though.
Yeah.
Even so, in that one.
What
instance.
I'm saying is, it's best. I think we leave Recife alone.
Yeah.
Just for the sharks alone. But as I say, forgive me for being a little bit naughty there and looking further ahead in the tournament. But I'm trying to be a bit positive. Go on. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say with England, you can say Italy are going to win the group now, but. It's not definite. That's not a definite.
Yeah, I'm almost not buying Uruguay being that bad again.
That's the problem. So the point with the Uruguay game next is that you've got Suarez will probably play.
Yeah.
Suarez will be really, really keen.
And they have got so much riding on it now. They've got to get a result against
England. As do England.
Well, yeah. But I think Suarez will score, which means England need to score two goals, probably. I mean, a draw, fine. And essentially, if England draw with Uruguay, assuming Italy beat Costa Rica, and it comes a straight shootout between England bettering Uruguay's result.
Mm.
But
Costa Rica...
Italy, but what I was going to say was, England will need to score two because Suarez will probably score.
Mm. Yeah.
And so then the whole point of what we made earlier about the composure in the final third is much more important.
Yeah.
England need... 4 points may well do it. Depending on how that... If England beat Uruguay then drew with Costa Rica, it could be Costa Rica that go through.
Yeah, because, they're going to cause us trouble if they play as they did against Uruguay.
Yeah. England need to win the next two games, really.
Yeah.
And England should win the next two games. And if England cannot get at least 4 points out of the next two games, then they don't deserve to go through.
Of course.
So we know what we need to do. And England are better going attacking. We saw that at the end of the qualifiers when we needed to win the two home games. We saw, against Italy, we looked going forward. Actually, I thought it was really good that Costa Rica beat Uruguay. Not the fact that it's a great spectacle and the tournament has been brilliant. I mean, it's defecated all over the last one already.
Yeah. We've had over 3 goals a game on average already.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely marvellous.
And isn't that alongside the stat that the first round of games is normally significantly lower scoring?
Yeah. I think there's normally about half a goal per game on average less in the first group games than the second two.
Everyone's just ignoring that this time. I love it. It is like the opposite of the way people were set up in the last World Cup. Maybe it's a very deliberate thing.
Well, we were saying how nobody in the Premier League can defend the last last season, which made it a good season, and in other leagues perhaps there's not great defences, so of course that does translate to a chance.
Yeah,
it's the same player.
Can I just say also in the betting, England are still favourites to go through ahead of Uruguay. Mm. I mean, it's Italy and England are favourites to qualify.
Well, again, going on Saturday's results, England have lost to the best team in the group,
yeah,
and only narrowly. Uruguay have been given a bit of a, well, not a pasting, but they've been...
It's a comprehensive defeat.
Yeah, yeah. Beaten fairly well by the team who everyone thought were going to be the whipping boys.
Mm.
So you look at it like that. I mean, Uruguay, and also, you know, they had Pereira sent off, who's
which
a
is great for us.
Yeah. Is that Pereira, or is it Pitbull?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They might be the same guy.
Sometimes I see Roy Keane wherever I go, and that was such a Roy Keane thing to do, wasn't it? Oh, yeah. Fuck this.
Yeah. Having a bath.
If it's going to be like this, I'm going. Isn't it? Well, it's, oh, yeah. I'm getting the bath. Run me a bath. That's what he said over. He went over beforehand, and people thought he was getting tactical instructions, but he was just saying, look, run us a bath.
He's just gone around Brazil and thought, oh, everyone's having a jolly up. I'm getting involved.
Mm.
I am getting right in there.
Such a stupid red card.
Yeah. More Football World Cup chat after this message.
Listeners to the Football Ramble are eligible for a fantastic offer with Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and simple to build your own professional website and online shop. The easy-to-use drag-and-drop tools, responsive designs, and 24/7 customer support teams based in New York and Dublin mean you can create a beautifully designed website for as little as £5 a month. This includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Seamless e-commerce solutions mean that your business can be taking money in minutes. So when you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code RAMBLE to get 10% off and show your support for the Football Ramble. No credit card required. Start building your website today. A better web starts with your website.
But let's talk more about Uruguay versus Costa Rica. Uruguay went 1-0 up. Cavani scored the penalty. And you just thought, yeah, business as usual. They'll probably go on to win 2 or 3.
Because it was looking like that might be the first kind of duff game of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And then, no.
Because when England equalised against Italy, I was thinking, this is a World Cup of comebacks. We're going to win this now.
Yeah.
Because obviously Spain, Netherlands, which we'll come on to. And then Costa Rica went behind and obviously won.
Yeah.
And Ivory Coast went behind and won. And so it's happening all the time, apart from an England game, which is a little bit annoying.
I think there is already the same amount of comebacks in this World Cup than there was in the whole of the previous last World Cup.
I am teetering on the brink of losing my shit about how good this World Cup is, basically constantly.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. There was a crucial moment in the first half of the Uruguay-Costa Rica match where Diego Forlán hit a deflected shot.
Oh, that save was brilliant.
That save from Navas was superb. And
he would not be knowingly accidentally lobbed.
Yes. But in the second half, Costa Rica came out, and Joel Campbell, who...
He was magnificent all game. He still does look a bit raw, a little bit individualistic, but I'm obviously hoping that Wenger will bring him back. He has a European work permit now, so he should be able to...
He's been playing in Greece.
Yeah, exactly. So
Duarte's header to make it 2-1?
Oh, God, yeah, that was so... Like a perfectly precise
finish.
Curled header. Yeah. How often do you see that?
Yeah. What an absolute hero.
It. And then obviously the third goal from...
The third goal...
Great ball from Campbell as well, but the
finish.
Favourite
goal of the tournament.
Yeah, great finish.
It was. What would you describe it as, Marcus?
Well, I'd put it out there and thought it was a slip and a brush.
But yeah, I'd have that.
People were saying, is it a slip and a slip or a slip and a slot? I didn't think it was a slot.
No, it's a brush.
We're having a brush.
Yeah. It's nearest to... The nearest thing it is a brush.
Yeah.
I think.
It's one of those funny
slip
ones.
Slip and a slot sounds satisfying, though.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll see one of those.
It wasn't a slot.
For me, a slot is
in
quite
the
a hard... With the inside
precise.
Of the foot,
yes.
foot, but it's hard and it's in the corner.
Correct.
You slot it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get rid of that.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. Brush is much more of a caress, and I thought it was more of that.
Yeah. So we've had the first slip and a brush.
Yeah. Already.
Lovely old job.
We've had more slips and brushes this tournament.
We've not had a screamer yet, have we? We've not had a long range screamer.
Sterling, did you not see it? Beauty, mate.
Yeah, we haven't yet.
That was the
His imaginary kids must have been losing it over that.
Well, we might have done.
Those little,
talk about Japan, mate.
Those little moments you have in life, those little emotional moments that aren't actually real. Like when you think, I don't know, you've won the lottery or something.
Yeah.
Like, and for... It may only be for like 5 or 10 seconds, but you are the most happy you've ever been. That's what it was like with the Sterling thing.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got brought down to earth. So I sat down on the sofa afterwards. Sorry to go back to this, but I sat down on the sofa afterwards. Everyone was quiet. There's about 5 or 6 people in the room, and they're telling me, I could hear my heart. Just hear it going boom, boom, boom.
But the thing with that goal, though, is it almost felt like we'd had a legitimate goal disallowed.
We're even calling
and you got to G yourself back.
You just got
go G yourself up again. Like, right, come on, England. Yeah. You've been denied this time. Go and you've done it once. You can do it again.
Yeah. You haven't done it once.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. Oh my goodness. But it's great though that England have lost. I know we've moved up, but England have lost. But we're
happy.
In good spirits.
Yeah. I did not see this coming.
Yeah. No. Maybe we're turning into Ireland.
Yeah. You
know, it just happened to be there kind of thing. Sorry, that's no disrespect to Ireland, but I'm going on the last Euros.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a fair thing to say. Group B. Spain 1, Netherlands 5.
We watched this game together, didn't we? It was a real treat.
Mm. Outrageous scenes from Salvador. Spain went 1-0 up. Again,
the looks on their faces. So basically, I mean, a couple of people have said to me I didn't think it was a penalty, but I thought it was a pen.
Mm. Costa was fouled.
I could see it going up or either way, but fair enough. I wouldn't complain too much about that. But when they scored it, it was a nice penalty. He struck it nicely, and then Casillas got, Dutch keeper got to it, but he couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
And then the look on all the Spanish players' faces. I know this is with hindsight, but I remember thinking at the time that's a bit weird. They just looked really self-satisfied.
Mm,
they thought, well, here we are again.
Yep.
This is the hardest game in the group.
It's only the Dutch. We always beat them.
Yeah. And then they got absolutely hammered.
Oh my goodness.
I've never seen anything like it.
But how much did the Dutch enjoy it?
Oh, but they earned it. Van Persie's goal. I mean, you're going to have to go some to get a better goal than that in the whole tournament. That could be the goal of the tournament. Brilliant. On the second day.
Yeah. If he is, and obviously he's a great player, so you imagine he has done this. If he's taken a quick look as the ball's come over at where Casillas is, who was poor by the way, and guided that header over him.
Oh, that's what he's done.
Oh yeah,
right. No. You don't think he's like, right, I just need to get something on.
Oh no. It's so calculated. It's the only way he can score with the, you know, position that his body's in, and he's worked
brilliant
it out
goal
perfectly.
Like,
you see the slow motion of there was a camera on Van Persie the whole time. The look on his face as he can't believe it's gone in is priceless.
How
and
bad
I, and I wish I could still enjoy it.
Yeah, right.
It was funny. The signs were there when Wesley Sneijder was put through, and he tamely shot at Casillas. And again,
he had quite a quiet game.
He did.
Compared to a lot of
which seems odd. But I mean, it was basically Robin van Persie running the show. Like, I mean, they're undoubtedly two of the best players in the world.
There's so much space.
Anyone's going to struggle with them. Yeah, it's weird.
So
strange how these trends come up through games.
Yeah,
what I'll tell you who was really good. Daley Blind was good.
He was. Do you think, is it fair?
Azpilicueta is a good. I know Azpilicueta has been playing on the left quite a lot with Chelsea. He's a good player.
Yeah.
He's right back for Spain. He's a good player. And Blind just waltzed all over him.
Yeah, it's nice to see Blint having a good tournament.
He's not even. I don't even think he's a natural left back, because he's played like holding midfield for Ajax before.
Yeah.
So I think it's either he was a left back and he's Depretos in midfield, or the other way around. But he doesn't consistently play left back, and he's been so good. He was really good. I mean, because a lot of people are saying that Netherlands' defence is their weak point.
Mm.
But they, I mean, they're
much. Everyone's saying that about every team, though.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, but David Silva missed a one-on-one in the first half. Again, after they were... I think that was at 1-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 1-0 at half-time, wasn't it? Scored the first
I'm pretty sure that was at 1-0. Again, it was just all quite casual, as you say. Mm. It was, I'll go for a little dink. Now, we love a dink, don't get me wrong, but I thought that one did look particularly casual. Mm. Spain didn't look good with a man playing up top. Obviously, it was Diego Costa.
And also, it's like they've forgotten how to lose. Like, they're so used to just winning that they'd forgotten how to dig in and fight their way back into a game. And they almost seem to give up at 3-1.
Didn't they concede three goals in the whole tournament in 2010?
I think so.
I think,
because you have five goals in total the last two tournaments.
Yeah.
And they've conceded five.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So they conceded 5-1 game, yeah. I mean, put it in perspective, Spain were poor. I thought, for the first time I can remember, Xavi looked off the pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously, he's getting on a bit now, so maybe that's understandable. I'm not going to write him off on the basis of one game, because they lost their first game in 2010.
Yeah, we have to remember that this is just the first game.
But it's the manner of it, though, isn't it?
But the thing is, I was going to say that. That's what people are saying.
Yeah.
And it may well be the case, but it may not be as well, because Casillas gave them three goals.
Yeah.
He essentially gave them three goals. So the touch, the horrendous touch,
that was
bad. The decision to come out for the fifth, was it, when Robin went round him?
Yeah.
That was mad as well.
But he's just trying to claw back some pride, isn't it, making bad decisions.
Of course, yeah, but I mean, he's done that thing what keepers do a lot, and obviously it stands out a lot more when you're a goalkeeper. He's made a mistake, and then he's gone, right, he's got into the mindset of, I now need to atone for this mistake, rather than just put it out of your mind.
Yeah.
Carry on making the decisions we'd normally make. He starts making other decisions that he wouldn't normally make to try and make up for what he's already done, which he can't change.
Mm.
And if you're a footballer or a sportsman at that level, I just don't think you should ever do that.
Mm.
Like Tiger Woods, I read something really interesting about Tiger Woods. He says, like, when he addresses the golf ball, he draws an imaginary red circle around him and the ball.
Was that with vanishing spray?
No, yeah, there's no spray. Okay, right. Or as Phil Neville would call it, imaginary spray. and apparently he strikes the golf ball, and whether it's the best shot of his career or he just tops it into the rough, as soon as he steps out of that imaginary circle, he never thinks about that shot again.
Right.
So he plays the game in a series of just individual shots.
I like that. Yeah.
And psychologically, apparently, that's part of the reason why, I mean, he's a great golfer and stuff, but that's part of the reason why it works. And really, you think, to bring that back to Casillas, he shouldn't be making decisions that he wouldn't normally make because of mistake. It's a stupid thing to do. And the other guy I was going to talk about was the foot race between Robin and Ramos. Right?
Yeah.
Mm. Where apparently, I read today that Robin... that was the fastest sprint ever recorded by a player at a World Cup, apparently. I know that's true, that's what I read. But anyway, my point was, if that game was still 1-1 then, Ramos brings him down.
Oh, yeah.
And takes it and takes the hit. And they probably won't lose the game. But because it was already 4-1, or 3-1, whatever it was, he thinks, well, I'm not going to get suspended. Mm. I'm not going to, there's no point.
What I found amazing about the way the Dutch played was there was a real glee in sticking the knife into Spain. It was
which is the way
revenge.
It should be.
Yeah, it was revenge for the final, the last World Cup, and it was beautiful to watch.
Yeah, it really was a delight, obviously, if you're not a Spaniard.
I know this sounds crazy, but personally, genuinely, at this point, I wouldn't be writing Spain off.
No.
I wouldn't be writing them off as...
Of course not.
There's every chance they could lose.
Yeah, but...
people are saying Tiki-Taka's dead and all
this. This is Spain. There is no way they're going to now get annihilated by Chile and Australia.
Can you imagine...
The Chile and Australia have got much harder games than they would have had Spain won, actually.
It's funny, isn't it, when people say, well, that's the end of Tiki-Taka. No, it isn't. Because
on the telly were ridiculous.
Because passing the ball and carving teams open by passing the ball is good and will always be a good tactic if you can do it. Yeah. Spain don't suddenly go, sorry, Xavi, just hit diagonals if you can, mate, and all that kind of stuff now.
The BBC, I think it was the BBC.
Go back to futsal, Xavi. Yeah. It's just not going to happen, is it?
I think it was the BBC. Beforehand, they just wouldn't shut up about tiki-taka, and that's what they kept saying. Mm. And after the game, they wouldn't shut up about total football. It's like...
Same thing.
Yeah, right.
That's really annoying.
It is a bit
in
annoying.
And around is getting ridiculous now. Yeah. It's getting to penalty levels of like ludicrousness. Townsend says it like every 5 minutes. It seems
he started to say in and amongst it as well. Has he? Now, which sounds a bit more sensual.
Yeah. At least that makes some sort of sense.
I just thought that I wouldn't sort of implying that total football and tiki-taka are the same or anything. All I was trying to say was that it's so reactionary to just go, oh well, total football's back now. Yeah, the Dutch are back.
Yeah.
They've got it back now.
Absolutely.
They've got their star.
But they weren't playing total football.
It's just a stupid thing.
You see teams playing sort of pockets of total football here and there, but the original idea is...
But just because they've got Dutch shirts on, people and they've won, people think it's total football.
Yeah, exactly.
Total
exactly.
football isn't being Dutch and winning a game.
I'd like to talk about the third Dutch goal from, was it De Vrij, who bundled it in. It was like a header, but then it sort of gently came off his foot. And that was the moment, wasn't it, when Casillas came out, lobbed over him, and you just thought... He was
being blocked off.
It was
by
like
one of the
that.
Dutch players. He was quite unlucky there. That one's a bit harsh to criticise Casillas on compared to the other two.
No, I'm not.
You just gotta be dominant. Though.
I'm not singling him out for criticism. I'm just saying
I'd criticise him for that goal.
Okay,
personally,
but I'm saying that situation that unfolded there with the goal going in. That was the moment where you thought, right, they can knock up a big old score here.
Yeah,
don't be 3-1 and just see it out. Embarrass them.
Exactly, but they really, really wanted to, didn't they? Maybe they're just going to do that brilliant Dutch thing of everyone who sort of casually watches football going, oh, they're going to win it now, they're amazing, look how good they are, and then they'll just burn out later on.
Mm. Yeah, it's not, they've never won it before. So, I said to my mate, who's half Dutch, actually, I was watching the England game with him yesterday, and he was really obviously chuffed with the Netherlands game. And I said that part of it is a joke, just to sort of bring him down to earth. The thing about Netherlands, Tommy, is that they'll always let you down, mate. Mm-hmm. And he went, oh yeah, fuck off. But I could see in his eyes. He was like, yeah. I know, let me enjoy the moment.
They've got a very interesting World Cup history, the Dutch. They didn't qualify for a World Cup between 1938 and 1974.
Yeah, and then they went right up there, straight away.
Into the final in 74.
Yeah.
And obviously 78 as well. There have been three World Cup finals in quite a short space it would be, time.
I'd love them to prove us all wrong.
Yeah,
they deserve it so much.
Oh, it'd be great to see another new winner.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, unless England, of course.
Yeah.
Then I'd take a previous winner. Because apparently we won it. I'll tell you about it after the show.
Yeah.
Chile are underway. And
Chile
they beat Australia 3-1. Little team in Edinburgh. Called the Magnificent Gorgie Boys. Got a couple of mentions in that game.
In what context?
A couple of former players were on the show.
Okay, right.
So they beat Australia 3-1. And they started superbly.
Yeah.
They're like a.
I love Valdivia. Good sort of South American based playmaker. Not really played much
in
Europe.
You make the point that he's the type of player which is used to be the kind of one of the great things about the World Cup, players that you don't know about.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays you tend to know because of obviously mass media and televised games around the world.
I was looking up Valdivia. I thought, pretty sure I'd heard of him before. And I think it's probably when he must have played against England at Wembley. Maybe. But anyway,
possibly.
And I thought, I wonder what club he's playing for now. And he's still playing in South America. I think he's only had one little stint in Europe, and that was at Servette in Switzerland, I think.
Well, right.
So he's not really a very well-known European player, but he's great to watch.
He took his goal superbly.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, placed it nicely. I thought it was a really interesting. Chile and Australia reminded me of Mexico-Cameroon. Mm. And, of course, Chile won the game. The 3-1 score is a bit harsh on Australia because Chile scored very late on, and Australia were pretty good value at 2-1.
Yeah.
But it was a great contrast because Mexico played Cameroon and showed everyone how to beat
a really
physical team, which I thought that Chile actually really struggled against Australia's physicality.
Yeah, they did.
And Australia, when they scored, were right back in it.
Cahill had them really
flying
worried.
Around, wasn't he? Tim Cahill. Yeah, it was a brilliant
that
header.
First one. But a lot's been 5'10".
Yeah,
he's shorter than that. I think he's like 5'8" or something.
He's got spring heels though. A lot has been made of Chile being the shortest team at the tournament, and they do look like a little team of Staffordshire Bull Terriers. But it was really noticeable against Australia, like once Australia worked out how to use their physicality against them, it was so effective because it really did look like they'd get steamrolled at one point, but they just stood up.
I don't think Vidal was fully fit there, was
no. He came off and looked really angry about it as well, so maybe, I don't know, I've not heard a report or anything, but I think that injury is going to carry on for a bit.
I think he's been struggling with fitness, but Medel obviously plays centre-back for Chile, and I know he's not had the greatest season for Cardiff, but you wonder whether they missed he was in midfield. It could go either way. I mean, he could have got himself sent off, he could have had a shitty game, but when he's on his game, Medel in midfield, he's good. He could have been ideal against Australia in the middle of the pitch because they were getting dominated.
Yeah, Bresciano nearly equalised. Bravo, a good save. Lecky had an all right time for Australia.
Only two players have scored in more World Cups than Tim Cahill. And it's Pele.
Uwe Seeley,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of players have scored in 3 World Cups.
It's still Tim Cahill plays for Australia, mate.
Yeah, I'm not amazing.
He did a classic Cahill, because obviously he scored his header, and after that he had another header,
which was
and it was disallowed, right? And he was massively complaining.
Yeah.
You look at the replay, fouled the defender, he was like 3 yards offside, and was like still moaning about it. That is textbook Cahill.
Yeah. He's getting himself fired up.
His pre-match interviews were so funny. Like, it was as if the person asking the questions was sat like 100 meters away. Just like,
we're really looking forward to getting started.
It was exactly like that. Yeah.
He's just furious.
It was really odd, wasn't it?
Bojazor with a great drive.
Yeah,
that rifle. Was a drive.
Mm. Yeah, that was a rifle. I think it was a rifled drive.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes these things combine.
Yeah, a driven rifle. Was it
Bojazor who had a good World Cup in 2010 and that got him to move to the Premier League? And now he's obviously playing.
I can't remember.
I think it was.
Yeah. You mentioned about Chile and their sort of lack of physicality. You would wonder then, if they can get through the group, they would probably play Brazil and they would really struggle.
It's hard to say because these first games are difficult. Yeah. I said this about Brazil.
So much football to go in the group yet.
That's true.
With the Brazil-Croatia thing...
Why am I jumping ahead?
Exactly. With the Brazil-Croatia thing, it could be that Brazil were really nervous and now they've got it out of the system, or it could be that's how Brazil are going to play. If it's the latter, they're going to struggle. It's the same with Chile. Mm. Chile could think, right, we've got a game under our belt, we didn't play very well, we got the win. And they won't have it all. Spain won't have it all their own way against Chile. There's no doubt.
I just think I'm getting quite giddy and excited.
Yeah, you are. You know, it's difficult to know what's going to happen with the because it's a one-off game, isn't it?
Yeah,
one-off performance.
Forgive
so
my giddiness, ladies and gentlemen.
You are forgiven.
Thank you very much, sir. Group C, the Colombians impressed. They beat Greece 3-0. I didn't see the Birdman.
No, I didn't see him on the TV, but someone sent us a picture of him. So apparently he's around.
I can't wait for Ghana's game because I need to work and know what's happened to the pot, man.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That is the pressing issue, isn't it? But going back to...
They had another sort of Birdman type guy. He looked a bit like... someone was saying to me on Twitter, he looked a bit like Baron Samedi from Live and Let Die.
Okay, right.
All sorts going on there was. Makeup and big costumes.
Yeah, the Colombian fans are so colourful. They're absolutely amazing. Obviously, they outnumbered the Greece fans by about 2,000 to 1.
I felt like there was a lot of fans booing England last night.
Were there?
I could hear a lot of boos when England had the ball last night. I wonder if it was because of the Roy Hodgson-Manal thing.
Maybe. One thing I've...
Were they saying Boo Earns?
Yeah, they might be saying
probably Boogson. Boogs. Boony. Yeah, one thing I'd forgotten about actually was that there are going to be a lot of locals at the game, so Diego Costa is going to get absolutely hounded every time he's on the ball. That's going to happen throughout the tournament. Mm. That hadn't even entered my mind that you might suffer that. He has had a rough couple of days, I think it's fair to say.
Do you reckon Del Bosque might sort of go back to sticking Fabregas as like a false
nine? I think he should.
Take
maybe.
Costa off, maybe.
Yeah, or even Villa. Yeah. Because Torres, you know, again was poor when he came on.
Yeah, no, I do think that.
But sorry to go back in time, mate.
Not to worry. Well, that's what the show's about this time. It's a review show. Armero scored. He squirmed one in after about 5 minutes. Lovely celebration.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Another really good one.
Yep. Loving that. Good stuff. And they did look good, Colombia, didn't they? They attacked well. They kept the ball at times. Gutierrez made it 2-0 in the second half, and James Rodriguez finished it off with a lovely one.
We've heard a lot about him. I've not seen much of him.
I thought Jackson Martinez was going to start, but they've gone for Gutierrez instead, kind of leading the line. And they, I mean, in that game, they didn't look like they missed Falcao too much. It was against Greece. And a player like Falcao, you'll always miss. Don't get me wrong. He was in the stands, though, and he looked magnificent.
Yeah, Greece were poor, but I think...
Did you see Falcao in the stands?
I didn't see that, no.
Oh, he looked gorgeous. Yeah.
Chiseled.
Yep.
Gekas missed an absolute sitter.
Didn't he just?
It's one of the worst headers I've ever seen. Like 4 yards
really?
Out.
Really? You have to score that at a World Cup.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're not going to get a lot of chances, are they, Greece? Not the most.
Their goal scoring record in the World Cup. Their record overall in the World Cup is really poor. I know they won the Euros in 2004, but like the World
Cup. That's still mental. Yeah. 10 years on, that is still crazy.
But they in the World Cups, they're terrible. I think they've like got one draw or one win in their last 8 games or something. It's really bad.
I was quite impressed with Cuadrado for Colombia.
He's a good player.
He had a very good game.
He's one of the best players at turning defence into attack. He's so quick on the ball. He makes right decisions quite a lot as well, which is obviously good to see.
Well, yeah, I mean, with Colombia, the personnel they've got, the team spirit they have, they qualified very well, actually, because Chile only finished, I think, slightly above Uruguay. Colombia had a good qualification. And have impressed in friendly since, and they've got a great side. They've also got a great manager with Jose Pekerman, who was in charge of Argentina during 2006 World Cup.
Quarter final.
Yes.
Yeah. He's vastly experienced. There's a great moment in the Colombia-Greece game where Gekas, who is a warhorse, faced up against Yepes, who's also a warhorse.
38-year-old Yepes.
Yeah.
38-year-old.
Creaky.
He's seen some
captain.
Battles.
Yeah.
He's seen some battles.
That pace has gone.
Well, probably never was there. I think the whole back four of Colombia play in Serie A. I think I'm right in saying that. Interesting with Peckham, he's the first foreign manager for Colombia since Carlos Bilardo, fellow Argentinian, in 1981. But I think his daughter was born in Colombia. He finished his playing career in Colombia, and he says, I actually feel quite entwined with this country.
Yeah.
So he's really got in there, and I think the fans like him. So I think, I mean, Colombia, they've got a winnable group. They should progress.
You think they'll top that?
They've got to be looking to progress, and you know, we'll see. But also in Group C, Ivory Coast, they beat Japan 2-1. I was so pleased for Ivory Coast because, again, as previously said, they've had some absolute awful groups before with Brazil and Portugal and Ireland and Argentina.
When they're at their peak, you think, with the players they've got, they got just absolute bastards of draws.
They really have.
It was difficult for them.
But this time around, and also they lost the first two games, so by the third game, well, actually, no, not in the last World Cup, but it was because obviously Brazil and Portugal played a 0-0. So, but they've always lost their sort of opening game and whatnot. They've won their opening game this time round. That they'll feel so.
Honda's got a nice one.
Oh,
I have to say, my memory after that point is very sketchy. So we're talking 2:30 in the morning. And I've been drinking since 6 p.m.
I haven't seen these ones.
The guy Arsenal are trying to sign. What's his name? Serge Aurier.
Serge Aurier is trying to get Arsenal to sign him. Let's be clear
he's
on
just piping
that.
Up,
yeah, he's.
Oh, is that right?
He's linking himself a lot.
Okay. Two assists. Lovely crosses in. Boney scored a great header.
Bonnie, isn't it?
Bonnie. A Bonnie wee lassie. He scored.
It's not Bono. It's not Bono.
Yeah, okay. Again, the giddiness has not quite gone. Yeah. Sorry.
You got World Cup fever, mate.
Oh,
sorry. You know what? I could prescribe for that. Three more games later.
Yeah.
It's always on.
England going home early.
Yeah.
That'll stop that. Lovely header. And then Jovinho scored a header as well. The squirmed in under the keeper. Beautiful pile on.
Those goals came very quickly. When they scored
it was Costa Rica-esque.
I remember them scoring the second one. But then I didn't know that they'd score one before that.
Right.
So I was like, how's it 2-1?
How drunk were you?
Why are they going that mental? Oh, it was a good old pylon. I did think about the pylon, actually. Obviously, the goal scorer goes down and a few of the players. And then the subs go on top, and you think, You're risking a little bit of injury there.
He's got to stop.
What should happen is the subs should sacrifice themselves in the pylon. So they should get there early.
The physios.
Physios first. We've had too many physios.
The backroom staff. They don't need to go on at any point. You don't want injured subs.
Get the backroom staff going in early, setting the foundations.
Maybe a sort of 8 to 10 delegated fans.
Well, if you've scored the goal,
that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Like, that'd be like the most England thing ever. You and your mates could be part of the official England bundle.
You sacrifice yourself.
Sponsored by insert there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? But if you score the goal, surely you've earned the right to be the last one on top of the bundle.
But that's not how it works.
No, of course it's not how it works.
You can't get other people to bundle and you get on top of it.
No, that's like a throne of people. It's not the same.
Inverting the bundle.
Yeah.
But Drogba came on. And when he came on, he made a difference. And that was really good to see. He came on in the second half and he's a bit older and whatnot. But it was lovely to see Drogba coming on and having a real influence over that side, which he's led the line for so many years. So well done, Ivory Coast. Shame on for Japan. I mean, they got off to a good start with a great goal. And I do love their kit.
I'd fancy
laughing at Jim.
Just you. The way you stopped. An almost little partridge-style pause. I do love their kit.
Yeah. Do you know, with a little pink trim?
Yeah, I like the kit.
I'm still talking about the kit.
Yeah. I'll give you a little pink trim later on.
That almost sounds like it's going to be a circumcision. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah. We've got loads more games today.
I know. Today alone.
And tomorrow and all the other days for the rest of our lives.
It's like when people had told us off for recording before Spain-Netherlands, at first glance seems fair enough. Mm. It's like, you do realise there's like loads of games. Yeah. Whatever happens, there's going to be games after this recording. This is how
we're reporting podcast 24/7.
Yeah.
Switzerland versus Ecuador and France versus Honduras. Apparently there was a drone hovering above France's training session.
It's amazing,
which FIFA are looking into.
Samir Nasri in it.
Yeah. Controlling it.
It's got a homemade explosive device attached to it.
What on earth is going on there? And of course Argentina v Bosnia, very much looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Bosnia's first World Cup, you know. It'll be so interesting to see
what the Lionel Messi that we have at this World Cup is different from the one we had at the last one.
4 years older.
Right, yeah. He scored I think 9 billion goals since the last World Cup.
Do you, Paul Merson said he's done nothing. You see that?
What?
Paul Merson said after credit, where did I see it? I think I saw this in media.
He didn't say that.
365. He did. He said that Lionel Messi has been, in his words, like rotten for the last 6 months of the season.
He scored 41 goals in 46 games this season.
Exactly. It's crazy.
Rotten.
But yeah, it will be great to see. I think Bosnia got a goal on them as well. So I famously, as part of the Betfair.com/football ramble tip on the first day of the tournament, tipped Brazil and Croatia, both teams to score. I fancy both teams to score in Argentina Bosnia as well tonight.
I love that.
Well, Dzeko could certainly get some joy from Demichelis. He'll have seen him up front.
I think Dzeko up close. My mate I work with says that like Dzeko's got the biggest discrepancy between his best performance and his worst performance. He's never played. He never really plays average. And at his best, he is almost unrecognisable from at his worst when he just looks like, what is happening? You know.
Do you know what? That country, Bosnia and Herzegovina, how they've come from, was it 19 years ago, something like that, when the country's kind of first formed, or they've played their first international game, and, you know, where they had to go out and buy their own kits from the shop, do you know what I mean, or something like that. It was not far off jumpers for goalposts and all this. Of course it would be, you know.
The amount of players coming out of the former Yugoslavia is amazing. If you think of the players of Kosovan descent, you got obviously Januzaj, Shaqiri.
In Switzerland.
Granit Xhaka, yeah. Well, because they've obviously emigrated out to all different parts of Europe. Yeah, they've had to, you know, seek asylum and gone elsewhere, and now they're representing other countries.
I mean, it was,
but a lot of them are of Kosovan descent.
I mean, of course, it was tragic and horrendous what went on there. But without getting into that, for obvious reasons, because I'm not nearly qualified to talk about it, it is great to see now that those countries have re-emerged on the football stage in pure footballing terms.
It'd be a great time celebration
and
for those
seeing
guys,
Bosnia and Herzegovina in the World Cup. Absolutely marvellous. And a part of me thinks, oh, it's a bit of a shame that they've got Argentina first up, because that's a very difficult. But then another part of me thinks, great that they've got Argentina.
Look at that. This is what they're going to want, why they're there.
Azimir Begovic tweeted, didn't he, on the draw. He was like, first game, Argentina. Are they playing at the Maracanã? Maracanã?
Yeah, I think there might be. Yeah,
he was like, at the Maracanã, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you're damn right, big lad.
Yeah.
That's what we like. That's what we like. Should we have some correspondence?
Yes, we shall. I've stuck to the traditional theme.
Yes.
And you guys should comment on this. Let me just move my computer around. So you guys just chip in as and when you want to, of course. I just said, what's been your favourite World Cup moment so far? I originally said this week's question of the week is sponsored by Gary Lewin, but I feel bad now. I just thought that everyone's going to say Gary Lewin, but I didn't realise he'd actually broken his ankle. So there you go.
Was it definite break?
It might have been a dislocation, but it's bad enough that he's gone home. Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, I didn't know that because I've been drunk. What's been your favourite moment of the World Cup and why? Ollie Davis on Twitter has got in touch to say, every substitution and added time, those electronic boards are magnificent.
They are gigantic.
They're big Hublot watch ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
They're quite nice. Sam Tennant says, oh, this is childish, but you can have it in there because I just copied and pasted it without thinking about it. Phil Neville stating in commentary that Chiellini likes to film men up against him.
No, yeah, come on.
That's the sort of stuff we normally avoid on this show, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, I'll make a note of that.
True.
This is good.
Got to chuck in something good for the kids, though.
This is good. When Andy Townsend described a red card as the big card. And that's from Leo Pinnock, which is great. Jim, Barca Jim, Twitter, oh, yeah, ever-present Barca Jim says, that shit high-five between RVP and Louis van Gaal,
oh, was, yeah, really poor.
I did like how Van Gaal really wound up for it, and then Van Persie.
Yeah, they didn't look at each other's elbows, which we all know is crucial to doing a good high-five.
He finishes off by saying, old people should not high-five ever. RVP's not that old. Well, Louis van Gaal, fair enough. What have we got here? Holland lining up with the numbers 1 to 11 on their shirts.
Nice.
Good. Yeah.
Hashtag well-deserved victory.
That's why.
That's you in row with that.
It's nothing to do with the skills on the show. That's why they won.
The fact about Robin doing the fastest ever sprint recorded by FIFA, it was from Will Herbert on Twitter. So there you go. You get your credit now, Will. He's probably gutted for the last 20 minutes. Credit for that. Alistair Mitchell, the Stockholm Syndrome moment when I went from despising Phil Neville to loving him and making his commentary my ringtone. And Joe Fennell finishes us off by saying, my highlight so far is Marcus calling for Gerrard and Lampard in the middle. One holds, one goes. Hashtag Sven.
That's not true, and you know it.
And actually, I've got one more here on the Facebook. Josh Higgins, the notable absence of the England brass band.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh,
England band.
No, they're out there.
Are they? What, they've just not been allowed in? I didn't hear them.
I've not heard them.
Maybe even they were stunned by England's attacking.
Maybe it's too hot and they're just too out of breath, too easy. They can't do it.
Oh, we're coming. We're going to Brazil, but we're not fucking going to them now.
No, God. No, I'm not lugging my big drum that everyone hates.
Yeah. Everyone hates us anyway. Let's not go to Manaus.
There we are. Right, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Marvel stuff. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Wednesday. Yeah.
We'll be back next week.
Yeah, Pete's back there as well.
This week, it is Sunday. Excellent stuff. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yeah, I mentioned it briefly earlier. The betfair.com/footballramble landing page, where you can go and sign up, get a lot of good things going on, a lot of World Cup themed bets and offers and stuff like that. It is worth taking a look at if you want to have a bet throughout the tournament. So yeah, that's betfair.com/footballramble.
Excellent stuff. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.